Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, while together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
Man, it's great to be back with you. I've been here for a while here at the Journey Church, and it's nice to be back. I had 5 weeks this summer where Kevin and the elders were like, "Hey, we've been through pretty hard run here. Why don't you take some time and compress some of that time together?" And so the first week and a half, Angie and I got to have a little bit. The first part of it was a bit of a working thing, but then Angie and I, my wife and I, had time to get time away, and we celebrated our 25th anniversary. So thank you, and we had a ball. It was fantastic. And then we came home and moved. So we moved. We were living in a 3,000 square foot house, but we realized we hadn't thought about the fact that we had a back porch, a front porch, a garage, and a basement. And apparently, that's a lot more square footage of living space. So we had decided we're going to move to an apartment. We're gonna simplify. Our two oldest boys are 21. They were going on to their apartment. We have 18-year-old girl. She was graduating. We have our 11-year-old still. But we thought, well, this is a good time for transition. So you do some of the math. We'd given away about or sold half of what we had, and we thought we were good. So we moved into the apartment and realized we had to move back out of the apartment half of what we'd moved in. So we called this a season of the Great Purge. My wife is really good at being detached from things. I'm a little bit more of the romantic, you know, so I'm like, yes, but he wore those shoes, you know. Take a picture of him. So we have lots of photos of meaningful things. And someone else might be wearing my son's shoes. So it was great, actually, and having those 2 weeks to just buckle down and handle the move. And then last week, I was like, man, I want to go for a hike in the woods. I just need a cabin in the woods somewhere that's not hot. So my assistant helped me. We found this spot in Northern California. Do we have any West Coast people here in the house? Yes, you West Coast people. So I spent some time in the Redwoods, and it was glorious. And I have a story about that later on. But one of the purposes for me was to, you know, kind of get away. It was a Sabbath to not be lost in the management and problem solving and strategic thinking and constant kind of focus of the brain, teaching, all those things. And it really was. It was great. And so I'm in a really great place to talk about this. At other times we could talk about Sabbath and I'd have to start with confession. Because Sabbath really at its center is about rest. It's about pause. It's about a cessation of work. And for some of us, this is very difficult. So we're going to talk about this today, and then next week we're going to drop into it a little bit more. I'll give you some more specific things related to practices and some other things. But let's kind of talk about Sabbath as a big picture. What does the Bible have to say about rest and work and time? And we're creatures who are given a will. We're endowed with the capacity to willfully consider time, so how are we meant to steward it? What does the Bible say about that? In the book of Ecclesiastes, the Bible tells us that life comes to us in seasons, like a story. There are beat changes throughout our lives. We don't live into one emotion or one experience. They are varied. And like the tide, life ebbs and flows. And occasionally, the sunshine of your day is turned to the darkness of night. So when you watch the eclipse tomorrow, see, you're lost in the poetry of it all. That's good. I had to fit it in somewhere, right? When you're lost, maybe you'll be lost, but when you watch the eclipse tomorrow, those of you who will, and those of you who think it's dumb and don't pay any attention, you'll hear someone talk about it. When the eclipse happens tomorrow, there's a phrase I'd like to come to mind. So if you're, you know, out sitting in chairs with friends or wherever you go watch it, there's a phrase I want you to hear, and I'm quoting Peter Forsyth. He says this, "Time is a sacrament of eternity." So just somewhere in the whole moment, would you allow this thought to come back, this quote, time is a sacrament of eternity, that the revolution and the rotating of planets in this system that we've been set in, that has been designed so perfectly by God with all this imagination and all this creativity and the way the world sits in such a way that this world can function and sustain life, would you remember that we are eternal beings? That we are living on a continuum. For those of us who have found God and awakened to his love, who place our faith and belief in him, we are living in eternal life. We're on a trajectory of eternal life. It's not something, eternity, by the way, doesn't start for us when we die. We're in it now. We are eternal beings. For those of us who are not interested in God's love, but would prefer to live lives according to our own plans, then we're living on a trajectory of eternal death. It's a hellish existence. We may not realize it right now. We may be disassociated to it. We might be medicating. We may not see it. We might really think we have a better plan. But if we choose to reject the salvation of God, then we're living on a trajectory of spiritual death. But we're all eternal beings. So time is a sacrament, and in this brief window of time, as willed creatures, we have an opportunity to engage, to steward, to manage what happens with a life that appears as a vapor for a little while but quickly vanishes away. What will we do with the time? What do the rhythms of our life look like? The Bible tells us that rest is meant to be a part of it. Now, before I go to a scripture which is really kind of sets the stage for what it means to rest, what it means to Sabbath, let me refer back to the Greeks, because the fact is we have all, the way we think has been influenced by the Greeks. From Greek civilization till now, if you've grown up in the Western world, we're influenced. Logic, thought, reason, all that stuff you can trace back to the Greeks. And they said this about time. They believed that time had two phases. The first was Chronos, and he was a nasty minor deity, a glutton and a cannibal who gorged himself on his own children. And they've made it kind of dramatic like that for a reason. They want you to catch the imagery of what Chronos is like, what as a slave master, as a taskmaster, what in this personification of those who are driven, what is it like to submit yourself to this kind of time god? Chronos was always consuming. Chronos is the presiding deity of the driven. Chronos, according to Mark Buchanan, betrays us always. It devours the beauty it creates. For those of you who are wired, who have personalities that are very driven, you like your goal setters. You like to crush things. You like to see the task. You like to do it. You like to stay on pace. For those of you who are wired like that in particular, then you, when I start talking about Chronos, you know who that is, because there is a voice on a loop that plays in the back of your head that tells you, why did you stop right now? You're still supposed to be going. Why are you not producing? Why are you not achieving? It's wound up, there are neural pathways for some of us that we're constantly trying to go. And here's the thing, we are meant to work, we are meant to create, and we do create beautiful things. We're co-creators. But how many of us in our drivenness have devoured the very beauty that we've created? How many of us have trampled on that beauty by not giving it the attention that it deserves? And yes, I'm talking about a marriage. Yes, I'm talking about children. Yes, I'm talking about not even enjoying your work, not enjoying the work of your hands because you're too distracted by achieving in the middle of it. Did you, like, the ability to work is something we're meant to actually enjoy. But if we don't pause, if we don't rest, if we don't stop, we don't see it. Now, some of you, before I move on, some of you might be going, I'm so glad you're having this talk today because my husband needed to hear this. And my wife needed him. So this is the right time. I'm glad we came today. There may have even been some elbowing happening. Like, because in a group this size, there are those of us who have the proclivity of overworking and overfunctioning. But before I move this spot, I want to say something. Because here's the thing. If you're like a workaholic, you lack the awareness that you're a workaholic, so everything I said didn't mean anything to you. So it doesn't matter. I'm just saying this. Hopefully it'll deposit and come to reality later on. But for those of you who don't fit that category, but you know of a workaholic, and you're glad that they're hearing it, though they're not really hearing it, I want to talk to you for a second. Because there are those of us who are driven and work, and oftentimes you might go, well, what you're doing is you're really medicating. You're staying disassociative. You're not actually paying attention to what's going on inside, the interior life. That's what we call the soul, by the way, the interior life. You're not giving attention to the soul. And you might even look at somebody and you can make that quick analysis. They're working so hard, they're not paying attention to what's inside. But there's another group of people that doesn't pay attention to the inside as well, and it may not be because of their vocation or their actually work, but it might be because they're rescuing. So they are emotionally on the job always, in a protective mode for themselves or constantly rescuing other people. So you might be working just as hard as your spouse by rescuing everybody, by being responsible for every one of your children disproportionately, by being responsible for the neighbor's children, by being responsible for the neighbor's neighbor's children, by being responsible for each of the people who has a problem on the newscast, for constantly carrying the weight of the world. And the truth is, you're emotionally running just in circles. And you haven't paused either. And there's no emotional rest. Because you're too busy analyzing and or rescuing the lives of those in need. By the way, I have the proclivity of both, so I'm super jacked up. So I know both of you. Because I could be in either category. Like, I know the compulsion of both. The Greeks gave another term to this other face of time, and the word is kairos. This is the perspective that time is a gift. It's an opportunity. It's a season. Instead of asking, what time is it, they would ask, what is this time for? That's part of the reason Angie and I went through the process of this move. We said, what is this season all about? What is this time for? Time is a gift. We know, for us, we're in an old home, and as a homeowner, all these preoccupations, all these distractions, we want to be less distracted, and we want to be more focused in how we live out this love story. What can we do to adjust our lives? And come to find out, letting go of lots of stuff created more space for us, spiritually, emotionally. I don't know about physically, but there is a new space for us for this season, for this time. Kairos is the servant of holy purpose. And it's a good twist in perspective on how we see time. See, one of the most important and effective, not to mention simply obedient, ways to engage time is to enter a Sabbath rest. The idea of Sabbath shows up in the opening pages of Scripture. It's actually modeled for us by God. The creation story plays out. God is creating. His imagination is on display. He's forming the universe and all that is. In chapter 2, verse 1, it concludes with this: thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God is modeling for us that after a season of creativity, there is meant to be rest. And then God gives some really specific instructions to his followers. There are these chosen people called the Israelites. They're the object lesson for the rest of humanity. And there was a part of their story where they were enslaved for 400 years, and they were led out of that slavery on a grand exit called the Exodus. And as they exited, they needed some really clear communication on how to live. They'd been slaves. They're being given freedom and new beginnings. And so God gives them this very foundational element. We call it the Ten Commandments. One of those commandments, the fourth one, says this, Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. When you hear that phrase, keeping it holy, what does that mean? By giving it attentiveness and recognizing it as sacred. Sacred does not mean there's some church liturgy special formula thing. It means a sacredness. There's a sacredness in giving attention and intentionality to something and recognizing that God ordained it for something. So that's it. It's an obedience to the attentiveness. You have 6 days each week for ordinary work. By the way, we're meant to work. If any of you are like, oh, so glad we're having this talk because my wife keeps telling me to get a job, and I'm like, hey, I'm resting. You're meant to work. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. And the principle here is a principle of rhythm, 6 to 1. There is nothing magical about the day. It's the rhythm. It's the principle that we are not meant to continue to work 7 days a week, but we are called to rest. And we'll keep talking about why. The why, and for those of you who are why people, yeah, but why? Yeah, but why? Why can't I work? Why? We'll get to that. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart for you to give your attentiveness to it. He set it apart as holy. Sabbath keeping preserves and honors time as God's gift of holy freedom. And there's a lot there, and I'm going to keep moving past it. I'll just make one comment. God has given us, when you watch the eclipse, time is a sacrament of eternity. I've been given a gift. Not just the gift of seeing something miraculous. Wow, the moon is in front of the sun. Not just this solar eclipse thing. Not just the beauty of this moment and the science behind it. But it's a reflection on the fact that time is truly ticking away and it's a sacrament. What do I do with it? How do I keep it holy? How do I give my attentiveness to it? And so when I Sabbath, I'm honoring time is God's gift, and it's a gift of freedom. He's allowing me to do something with the time I've been given. Kronos is the slave master who has that voice on the loop in the back of your head. Life is about how many bricks you produce. Don't rest until the work is finished. But can we say just a quick word in honesty about work that isn't finished? Moms, is the work ever finished? Even after they leave your house, mothers, is the work ever finished? Fathers, is the work really finished? Go to your job. Is the counting ever really done? Do you ever write the best song you've ever written and never write again? No, it doesn't matter what you... The work is never finished. And here's the other thing. It's never done quite right, is it? The chore is never done just exactly the way you hoped it would be. And the thing you created, the book you wrote, the poem, the whatever, you could always give it a little more. There's another email you could have sent. There's a thank you note you could have written. There's a prayer you could have prayed. It's never finished. So we must learn to live in the tension that life is an unfinished symphony that is playing around us. And Sabbath just keeps showing up in the middle of what's unfinished. You're never going to quite get the closure you wish you had, not on this side of heaven. Why? Because there's a longing, there's a rift in this dimension that's reminding us that we were created for more. The tension's there on purpose. The Sabbath is stuck right in the middle of that tension for us to remember that we are not our own sustainers of life. It comes from another place. That life is not measured simply by what we do and how we produce. Here's the truth. It's hard to grasp. It's the center of it all. You are loved for who you are, not for what you do. God calls us to Sabbath because he wants you to slow down long enough to listen to his voice and to be reminded that your value comes simply from being. You're a human being, not a human doing. And without Sabbath, without a pause, without rest, we don't see it. We get lost in anxiety. And Mark Nepo says anxiety comes from not being able to orient yourself in your own existence. Have you had that moment where life just gets so much and you're disoriented? And what we often do when we're disoriented is think, well, if I can just fix that, if I can solve that, if I can do that, if I can get there, and the drive increases, when really the thing often what we must do is stop, pause, listen, pray. And there might be a season of hard work that comes from it. There often is. Sometimes 6 days every week. But there has to be in our lives this pause, because otherwise hurry will keep us distracted. When we slow, it causes us to face our fears and feel our doubts. I'll give you an example. I kind of lived some of this out in real time. So I told you I went to Northern California, went to the Redwood Forest, which was just mind-blowing for me. And when I was a little kid, I had a coloring book or something where I'd seen like a car that drove through a tree. So I've always kind of always been mesmerized by it. And I wrote a book that's not out yet, still with the editor. But in that, and I tell the story of knowing about the Redwoods but not knowing them. So I've always kind of had this thing like with the Redwood Forest. So when it was time to go away or looking for woods, I'm like, oh, let's go to the Redwoods. So got a little cabin thing, stayed in the Redwoods, so I would just go hike each day. So the first day was not really a hike, it was more of a stroll. I strolled through the forest, and if you know anything about the Redwood Forest, you Northern California people, it's just, it's totally silent. Like, those of you who grew up in the north in like, winters, you know how it's totally, like, you don't hear anything, it's just totally silent? It's the same thing. And I guess it's because the canopy is so high or whatever, it's just silent. It was amazing. So how the first day, I did like a 3.5 mile, you know, walked, and I was... It's beautiful. I was rest and walking and communing with God. I would touch the trees and talk to him, and it's kind of weird, but I would just, I'm like, I'm in California, other people probably do this, so I just talk to the trees and when in Rome. So I was loving it. It was so great. So the next day I was like, hey, I did this, you know, cathedral of trees. That was cool. And somebody told me I should do this hike. You know, how long is that? And she's like, well, that's about 13 miles. I'm like, whoa, okay. I'm like, well, do you think I can do that? And she's like, well, I don't know. Are you in shape? And I was like, well, I moved last week, you know, so I feel pretty good about that. And she's like, yeah. So I did the 13 miles and I climbed into bed later that night. More exhausted than I had anticipated. And that day, I enjoyed less because I kept telling myself, I got to get home before dark. Like so I was focused on this goal. The first day I strolled, I talked to the trees. The second day, I didn't talk to any trees. I was sweating profusely, and the whole time I had just a little bit of thing like, well, what if I don't make it in time? What if it gets dark? And so I just and I'd go, oh no, Jamie, no, stay present. Today we hike. It's just a hike. Okay, so I'm gonna enjoy the hike, enjoy the sweat, taste the salt on the sweat. Yes, I'm gonna be present to the moment. So off I went. So third day, I was like, I ain't doing that again. That was nice, but I can't move. So the third day, I went in, I said, hey, I see this trail right here. It's called the Westridge Trail. That kind of looks cool, and it's not 13 miles. And so I'd like to do that trail. She goes, well, you could go up a little close, but the bridge is out right there. I was like, the bridge is out. I've seen bridges out. I can walk across the riverbed, you know, like, well, I can get it. Because it's not like flowing rivers or streams. I can. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I'm like, I got a map. So I go out, and I get to do my hike, and I make it up. And sure enough, the bridge is out. Okay. And I'm like, I could walk across, just walk down into this gully stream thing up the top. But there's a sign, somebody wrote in marker, this trail is closed, exclamation mark. So I just had this terrible ethical dilemma. Because I'm not real good at following the rules. And I had my wife in my head going, it says the trail's closed. We don't go on the trail. I'm like, I'm out to meet with God. Do I disobey the... I'm like, what? Somebody wrote it in marker. That's more like a guideline. So I'm literally standing in front of this thing, like, wringing my hands. You know what? I'm going to follow the rules. I will not go on this part of the trail. I know the trail picks up later on, and I will go around this part, because I can go out on the parkway and hike the parkway up. I'm looking at the map, and there's a little insert point right there, and now you can't get back in. So off I go. Oh, I'm thinking this might be a mile or two. I'm on the parkway, which is, you know, lovely, and cars and people on their motorcycles are walking behind. I'm waving. But after about 30 minutes, I'm like, I really thought I would have saw the trail by now. Pulling out my map, and Like, well, worst case scenario, there's a trailhead way up here at the northern part of the park. Long story short, that's where I wind up. I miss whatever the other trail thing was. So I make it into the trail. Like, all right, that was longer than I thought, but I'll make it back. And the thing says it's about 5 miles back. I don't know how many miles I've already walked. Like, all right, it's all right. It's cool. It's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. It's getting a little later. I start walking down the trail. So about an hour in, and I haven't seen anybody. Like, there's not a person on this trail. And now it's like 6:30, you know, the colors are changing a little bit. And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, like a dusk thing. And now I start thinking about the ranger said about mountain lions and bears. And I'm like, there's no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. I'm going to talk to some of these trees again. So I'm walking down the trail a little longer. Have you ever seen What About Bob? There's a moment where he's walking alone and he goes, there's nobody here. There's nobody here. I kind of had that moment. I'm like, there's nobody here. I haven't seen anybody. It's an hour and a half. I've been walking down this. And I started to have all these fears started to come up. And the next thing you know, I'm like thinking about the mountain lions. And then I remember them saying, mountain lions don't like voices. So I'm like, I looked on my iPhone and the first thing that came up was the George Twins. They're really great musicians. So I put my phone up and I'm playing the George Twins music, like. And then I'm like, maybe I should pick up a stick. And I had this moment where Yoda said to Luke, if you take the lightsaber into the tree, you take your fear with you. And Darth Vader shows up and I'm like, oh, I've been taking the fear with me. And then that means. Then they filmed Return of the Jedi in the, so I was in the kind of a Star Wars thing anyway. And maybe I need a lightsaber. And I'm walking. So finally, I'm like, I'm not going to take a stick. This is ridiculous. I've done this for 3 days. I haven't had any fear. Unless, God, there's like a perfect stick laying across the trail. I'll know that's meant. I was in the woods for a few days, okay? I had a little time. And there was a perfect stick laying across the trail. So I am now walking down the trail like this with the George Twins playing. There's nobody here. 3 hours, I walked on that trail, never saw another human being. Finally, by the end of the thing, I'm having all these conversations with God, and I'm realizing this was a totally different experience my previous 3 days, and no bears or mountain lions ever showed up. What was different? Was the trail different? Not really. It was more or less the same trail with really big trees. What was different was what I made up. It was what I was distracted with. I got seized by my fears, and I missed out on the beauty. And that peaceful walk became a lot of work. And there was no judgment in it. There really wasn't. Like, I'm like, well, everything belongs. God, you're teaching me. There's a lesson to be learned in this, and I'm walking through that. But how often are we walking through life making stuff up about all the things that could happen and not actually resting in the provision of God, not enjoying the beauty that surrounds us, not recognizing that ultimately he's in control? My prayer literally toward the end of it was, well, God, you made the mountain lions and the bears, so if they're going to take me, it's just time for me to go. And I mean, that's really, I mean, I was like working it to let go of my fears. It's so easy for us to get out of touch with reality. What is reality? The God of the universe holds the whole world in his hands. Your life, my life, every circumstance, every creature, every financial challenge, every broken relationship. And where do we place our trust? Without Sabbath keeping, we tend to place our trust in our doing. We lose our holy attentiveness. When we stop and pause and rest, we give attention to the soul, and the soul is what keeps us integrated and connected. When we started Journey 12 years ago, 14 people in a living room, we came up with this phrase that we still use today. We want to be a church that dwells in soul environments, knowing, living, and telling the love story of Jesus. The idea was, how do we stay in an environment where there's enough space for us to give attention to the interior life? to who we are on the inside. Not just what we're doing, but who are we? Where are we finding our identity? And if we don't slow and pause long enough, most of the time our identity will be tied to our doing. And when your doing gets overwhelmed, and when your doing is full of failure, and when your doing is full of fear, and when your doing is full of doubts, guess what happens to your identity? It begins to collapse. You begin to see yourself as someone other than who you are. Shame creeps in, fear consumes, and the sense of peace that I'm protected, loved, cared for, held as a child before God, we forget. And so God says, hey, I got a way for you not to forget. I'm going to keep it in your life. I'm going to put it in a rhythm. Every 7 days, let's make sure you slow down and rest. Every 7 days, remind yourself that you're not what you produce, but you are a person. You are loved for who you are, not for what you do. A story is told of an old rabbi and a young Jewish man that the rabbi saw running rather quickly, and the rabbi said to him, what are you doing? The young man said, well, I am running to make my living. The rabbi said, but perhaps in the process you are losing your life. Eugene Peterson says, if there is no Sabbath, no regular and commanded not working, not talking, we soon become totally absorbed in what we are doing and saying, and God's work is either forgotten or marginalized. Which is probably a pretty good way to do a kind of a heart check, soul check. Has there been some attentiveness in your life to the relational rhythms you have with God and God's people and people who are not yet awakened? People who long to hear. They may not know it, but they long to hear about the saving truth of Jesus. Has there been attention given to those beautiful spiritual rhythms, or have they been neglected by the distraction, by the working, by the producing, by the achieving, by the rescuing? See, Sabbath is the key to essence and not mere existence. We're called to rest, to be in a posture of listening. Mark Nepo says this, and I love this. It's just wonderfully poetic. He said, to listen is to continually give up all expectation and to give our attention completely and freshly to what is before us. Not really knowing what we will hear or what that will mean, but in the practice of our days, and in this case, every 7 days, in the practice of our days, to listen is to lean in softly with a willingness to be changed by what we hear. You see, there's a humility in it. Part of the reason Sabbath exists is so that we could lean in and go, there's lots I don't know. I might not be right. I need to be guided. I need to be reminded. So my prayer for all of us today is that we would be changed by these words and that we would allow a spiritual practice to remain in our life. And I say remain because you're here. You've paused in this moment to calibrate to the ways of the kingdom. You're here to listen. And how can you extend that? Put that in the context of a 24-hour period. It doesn't have to be on a Sunday. It can be on a Saturday. It can be on a Wednesday. This is not a Sabbath for me. I'm working today. I've got to find my space on a different day. I typically do it on Wednesdays in the middle of the week. And I have to be really disciplined to do it. It's a challenge for me. Find the space, put the spiritual practice in place so that at the foundation of who we are reminded continually, because we need to be continually reminded. You and I, we're loved today, not for what we do, but for who we are. Would you pray with me?